Welcome to Living a Good Life. I'm Brad Fain, and today I'm here with our superintendent of Humboldt Unified School Districts. John, I want to thank you for coming on the show and talking about living a good life and design of a community and all things that go into what makes Prescott Valley and a community a great place to live. So
yeah,
I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself so those that are listening and maybe haven't met you or understand exactly your role and what you do, where you came from, how you landed in Prescott Valley. Always good to know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. How'd you end up here?
Why'd you choose us?
So that's a part of a bigger, you know, I'll start way back in my childhood, I guess. I grew up in Minnesota. My first teaching job when I graduated from college was in Yuma. Got a teaching job down in Yuma. So I moved to Yuma.
How'd you like the summers?
I spent a lot of summers in Minnesota, so they weren't bad.
Okay, good.
Summers in Yuma are rough.
Definitely. But you had good produce.
Great produce. Yeah, absolutely. So I spent 10 years in Yuma. Teaching down there, and then I met my wife down there. We taught together at the same high school down there, and our honeymoon was Alaska, and we just fell in love with Alaska and decided that we needed to move, and so we moved to Alaska. So I had spent 10 years teaching English, high school English in Yuma, moved to to Alaska, and I was a high school principal for 6 years and elementary principal for 10 years, and then worked at the district office level for 5 years. And so 21 years total in Alaska, and so my wife is from Camp Verde, and so that's our connection to this area.
Nice.
Kind of came to a point in her parents' life where our proximity, being closer to them, is pretty important at that point in time, and so we started looking at trying to get closer. And Prescott, you know, we knew Prescott Valley and Prescott. I mean, you know, Verde Valley and this side of the mountain is, you know, we've been, her growing up here is a big part of our lives. And so this came open. And so 3 years ago, I became the superintendent of Humboldt Unified. And here I am.
Well, great.
Yeah.
I heard a little something in there that's essential to the design of a community. Family.
Yes.
I mean, you moved here for family because of... Yeah. And I think that's what makes a great community is family. And you touch a lot of families because of your business, because you're dealing with people that are raising their families. And and you're helping to raise a part of their family in a certain aspect.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about being an educator. What do you like about it? What do you love about it? What's your passion? And maybe we'll get into, like, what are some of the challenges that you now experience as the head of the system?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I guess I have two thoughts initially. One is obviously my passion for what we do in education is what we do for our kids. It's affording the opportunity. And I think probably in a little bit, we'll talk a little bit about some of the work that we're doing in our school district to better meet the needs of our kids, because I think that's really important on the work that we do. But, you know, it's really about the kids, and it's about, you know, I every day I carve out and I have scheduled at least a 1 hour meeting every day in a school. And part of that is I want to connect with principals. I want to connect with teachers. I want to be in buildings. But I want to be around kids. You know, it's one of the things that I miss about not working in a building anymore, you know, working at the district level is just being around their energy every day.
So we need to move the district offices inside the school.
Into a school, absolutely.
And then that would be your perfect environment. Absolutely. So you could just walk down the hall and get energized again and get ready to go tackle the challenges.
Yeah, I like absolutely. And so it really honestly is about what we're doing for kids and how can we create a better system to better meet the needs of our kids, but also with our staff, it's about developing a profession that they want to be a part of, not a profession where people get burnt out and they get drained and they want to leave the profession. But so what are we doing in our schools to make this a place that they can't wait to get to work every day? And then our parents too, you know, because they're greatly affected by that. And I think, you know, I think the other thing that I like about the work that I'm doing right now is, you know, as I've moved from role to role within school districts, that sphere of influence, it's humbling, and yet at the same time, I like that. Because when I was a teacher, I affected my, you know, at the high school level, I taught 150 kids roughly a day. You know, so my sphere of influence was 150 kids. Okay. When I became a principal, my sphere of influence was the entire student body. You know, and so I go from 150 kids to 600 kids. Okay. And I've got the ability to, you know, to make decisions that better affect the needs of 600 kids. And then, you know, when you move into a superintendency, it's now, you know, we have 5,700 kids in our school district, and I now am affecting, you know, 5,700 kids and 800 employees and 10,000 parents.
Yes.
You know, because every one of those kids, you know, in the ideal math, we'd have two parents. Yeah. You know, some of them have four, but let's talk about two parents for every kid. That's 10,000 parents in our community. And it's humbling because that's a big influence.
It's a big responsibility.
It's a big responsibility, right? Yeah.
And shaping our kids, I mean, this is where they're going to decide what they like to do, what they don't like to do. Yeah. They're going to pick up good habits or bad habits.
Yeah.
You're at a very, especially the younger ages, but all through.
Yep.
You're at such a impressionable job.
Yes.
On a population.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think that hasn't set in with me until you just said it. It's like, that is really an important role in how your impression and your team, all your teachers,
yeah,
how they impress our kids.
Yep.
Sets them on a course.
Yeah, and there's a saying in education that says, you know, education is the it's the career that prepares kids for every career. And in to your point on the fact that we as an education system touch every one of our kids, and they're all going to do something. You know, they're going to go and be electricians or doctors or, you know, superintendents or whatever that is, future teachers. But they all, every one of them funnels through what we do in K-12.
Yeah.
And it starts there.
Great.
And it's humbling. It is, because it's it's a big responsibility. But that's what excites me, is knowing that we're doing good things and making a difference for preparing those kids to go when they graduate from Bradshaw Mountain High School, that they're prepared to do whatever that they want to do and whatever choice they want to make in their life, that they're going to have the confidence to do that.
They're on a course to living a good life.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
their definition.
Yeah.
That's and what contributing I love about it. We all get to define it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me and tell those that are listening, like, I don't think everybody understands what a superintendent does. And I mean, we know you're the head of the educational system,
yeah.
But to help us get a better appreciation of some of the challenges you face as a superintendent, I think we can connect with a teacher and what they're struggling with. And,
sure.
you know, there's resources and the kids and doing that every day. But as a superintendent, I don't know as if everybody truly understands some of the challenges you face heading up an education system for an entire community.
Correct. And there's, yeah, I mean, there's complexities there, and I'll just throw a few things out.
Okay.
You know, one of them is budgeting, know, the whole budget process. One of them is, you know, it's a, you know, the superintendency is akin to a conductor of a band or a conductor of an orchestra or something. And the fact that you have all these different instruments, you know, and you have the trumpet that has its part. Mm-hmm. But the trumpet is not all of it. It's how you blend the trumpet in with the trombones and the piccolos and all of that stuff. And that's the conductor that brings all that stuff together. And in a school district, you know, we've got, you know, 300 individual classrooms with individual classroom teachers and another 350 support people who do all of that. And then you've got the buildings. You know, you've got Bradshaw Mountain Middle School, you've got Glassford Hill Middle School, you've got Granville Elementary School, you've got each one of these that are its own community. Within its own yeah. right, and you've got the parents and the teachers within that, and we've got buildings that have some autonomy, like a trumpet, but that they are also part of 10 schools that encompass HUSD. And so a big part of my role is managing and facilitating and making sure that what's happening in 10 buildings is consistent, that regardless of regardless of, you know, the geographic lottery of, you know, you happen to live in this neighborhood, so you happen to go to this school. You know, part of the role is the principal's job is to make sure that that school is running, but that principal's job is not necessarily to worry about or manage what's happening in another building. And so it just, you know, I want to make sure that regardless of what school kids go to because of where they happen to live, that they have the same opportunities. That yeah. If you're a first grade student here, you've got the same opportunities and the same good things happening to you every day as you do over here. And then managing the budget piece of that and, you know, allocating, you know, we get a finite number of dollars coming in from the state, and we got to figure out what that looks like. And, you know, that's a big part of what we do at the district level is figuring out, you know, it's opportunity costs. We can't do everything because we don't have all that money. Yeah. And so it's making those decisions that affect all 10 of our schools and 10,000 parents and 5,000 kids.
Well, let's talk for a minute about the kids. Are, as long as we have a thriving community, we have kids running around, they're going to show up at a school.
Yes. Right?
It's just what we do. I remember when I was like, yep, get on the bus, you go to school.
Yep.
So that part's kind of easy. They come whether you're ready or not.
Yes.
The challenging part that I want to get to is the teachers. And how do you attract, recruit, develop your teaching staff so that you have the team you need to receive these kids that are coming no matter what?
Correct.
Because they're in your community. So come that great day in August when all the kids are dreading it, they're coming at you, and you have to have teachers in all those classrooms and people ready to go. So talk to us about how that process is for you, any challenges you have with that side of the business.
Yeah, you know, personnel is a challenge that I think America is struggling with, and it might be, you know, a global issue, but, you know, in the last couple of years, staffing, and you know, we see, so we're experiencing that, you know, we're not fully staffed as a school district. Mm-hmm. You know, we're short teachers, we're short paraprofessionals, we're short bus drivers, we're short a lot of positions throughout the district. But that's not unique to HUSD. I mean, that's our reality in, you know, across education. But also, you know, I walk around in our community, and about any restaurant, store, anywhere I go, almost every one of them has a help wanted sign. Because I think part of our reality right now as a society is we're just short workers.
Where'd they all go?
And then where'd they all go? Right. You know, and so an interesting side note, but related to that, is I was reading an article that really kind of resonated me. It made a lot of sense that, you know, we've got obviously the last couple of years have been really hard. And the theory of that article was that we've got a number of what turns out to be some older people who have the means to retire, but a big chunk of it is younger people who we went through an experience as a world that made people stop and think about the importance of a life worth living, about, you know, what life do I want to be living? And that we have a generation that has the means, the financial means, to be able to just step away for a while and say, you know what, I don't know if that's what I want to keep doing, because I'm, you know, I'm dissatisfied, or it was, you know, this world, whatever happened to us, it made me stop and think, in that we've got a group of people in our society that just took an opportunity to step away and say, I'm just going to rethink what I want to do in my life. And I think at some point they're going to come back, and teachers are, you know, we're filling positions, and I mean, it's happening. But I just found that a really interesting scenario on some possibility on, so what did happen? Why is that?
It was definitely, I don't know if you call it a gut check, but it was definitely a reset for a lot of the world. Like, what are we doing? Is this the way we should be doing it?
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe that here we are a few years past it and things haven't smoothed back out. It's like, well, this wasn't broken before.
Yeah.
And nothing broke, really. It just all stopped.
Yes.
That was the breakage, was a stop.
Yeah.
But you would think when you start it back up, it would just start, and it hasn't.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting to see how that has impacted the community, how it impacts everything we do. To your point, you walk down any street and there's a help wanted sign. There's multiple of them.
Yep.
You talk to any business owner and they're like, biggest challenge I have is recruiting people.
Yep. And we have that same thing, you know, going back to your question then is, you know, so how do you recruit and how do you attract and how do you retain? And I think, you know, a big part of that is, you know, what I said earlier is, you know, what I'm trying to do in our school district is create a system that better meets the needs of our students and our families. I think there's some reform that can and should be happening in education, and that's what we're trying to address is how do we better prepare our kids for the future that they're going into, that as we've experienced in our lives, that the future, you know, 10 years from now, we can't predict entirely what that's going to look like. And that's different from 100 years ago when you were able to predict 10 years and things aren't going to change a whole lot.
Yeah.
And so how are we changing our system to better meet that? But then and that's on the student and the family side of things. Part of that too is on our employee side of things, is if we're rethinking what an educational experience looks like and feels like for our students, that also includes redefining what that feels like for our staff.
Yeah.
And so how do we create a system that better meets the needs of our kids and creates a system where, like I said, my goal is to create a system where kids can't wait to get to school and staff can't wait to get back to work because it's the highlight of their day. And I think that's a big part of that attract and retain piece. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing to make staff feel valued? What are we doing so that they walk into their jobs and there's a satisfaction there? You know, because there's a lot of studies out there on why people leave their jobs, not just education, but in general across all sectors, why people lose their jobs. And salary is not number one.
They're not happy.
They're not happy. And that comes down to they don't, maybe not like their boss. They don't like the people that they work with. They don't like the working conditions. They don't have a sense of value or purpose in their job.
I like where you went, sorry, but when you said we have to rethink things. Mm-hmm. And I think when you think of a community, communities don't necessarily stop to rethink either.
No.
Like how a community is just evolving and going, and every now and then we all need to just stop and rethink this.
Yes.
Like how's our community coming together? Are we coming together supporting each other in like what you're trying to do? Create this, like, this is an exciting community. I want people to be excited to live here. Yep. I want people to be excited to have their weekends here and live. But it's that rethinking.
Yes.
And how we rethink it. And I like where you went with that, because we don't do that enough. And just hit the pause button.
Yeah.
Don't stop, but just rethink things. And I like the energy you're bringing through your school system and what you're trying to create there.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, it would be contagious.
Yeah.
I would think walking down the hall, there's John. You know, I mean, I could just see your energy walking down, and people know when you're in the building.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And I think that's part of that workplace environment. Absolutely. Is if because to a certain extent, there's leadership from the top down. And if you see your leader moping around hallways and is grumbling and, you know, angry or sullen all the time, do you really want to work there?
Well, and you touched on a thing about being happy.
Yes.
And I've been reading a book, and it's talking about being happy. And talking about how your brain kind of, in a way, fights that. Mm-hmm. And it's not... It's like because of the way society has developed and grown. It's not just a U.S. cultural thing. It's worldwide. It's just the way society is. And it's also the way your brain is hardwired to protect you.
Yes.
And what's interesting, and I thought about this for a lot, he said, we're all born happy. And then from there, we start having life experiences that shape our future.
Yeah.
And people, unfortunately, a lot of people are unhappy.
Yes.
And what I liked what you touched on is how do you create that happiness so people are excited to be there, the kids are excited, the teachers are excited, but it all goes back to why do they leave an employer? Because they're not happy, not necessarily because of the pay.
Yes.
But it's happiness.
Yes.
And so how do you shape that? How do you tap into that part of people's brains to see the choices they have?
Yes.
To make themselves happy.
And part of that bigger thing then is... You know, so you just talked about the fact that, so the author is saying that people are born happy and experiences kind of take that out of them. And in education, there's a speaker and author, his name is Sir Ken Robinson, and he talks a lot about education reform. And Ken Robinson says that same thing within our education system, that if you go into your typical kindergarten classroom, you know, kindergartners have a lot of energy, and the teacher asks a question and you got every hand is up and they're all squirming because they can't, you know, they have excitement. But somewhere along the line,
going to the senior class, what time is it, can I go home?
You know, and his contention is that we, like society, we have experiences that kind of, if we want to use the term, beat us down or or beat us up, and we kind of change, and that we have a system that to a certain extent does that to our children. And again, that's what we're trying to address, is I want every kid from a kindergartner to a senior, they can't wait to get to school because there's learning that they want to engage in. And when that happens, teachers want to be there. When that happens with kids, that's what parents, that's what makes parents happy. That's what makes 10,000 people in our community happy, because my kid is excited to be in school, because as a parent, that's what we want. And then, you know, if parents are happy, then, you know, it just continues to ripple throughout the, because then they go to their jobs and they're affecting the rest of the people in the community. And
so let me try this on with you. It all starts with an emotion. So internally, we have emotions. And those emotions drive our thought and what comes out of our mouth. And so if you can create a mood in your schools, in your buildings, in your district office that produces the right emotion, then you get the effect that you're looking for. And I would say that would be like in the design of a community, of which a school is a major part of a community. I mean, it's huge. It may not be the biggest organization, but it's probably got the biggest impact. When you just did your math of students, teachers, parents, right? You're a big chunk of our community. How do we, as a community, then, in the design of it, create that emotion? That then produces that thought that moves the community forward in a positive way.
And because that can go either way. You know, it starts with an emotion. You can have a negative emotion.
That your brain could say, here's school again. I got to be the senior. Oh, man, I got six more months and I'm out of this jail. Right? Or whatever their thought is in their head. But that's their mood then. That's the emotion was inside them. That they didn't have that happiness experience in school. So now it's about getting out. And getting away, or it could be driven from the community. You know, how many kids, you probably see it, just say, I can't wait till I get out of here. And it's not here as the school, it's here as the community. And they want, I'm leaving, I'm going to school, I'm going to college, I'm getting a job, I'm never coming back. I mean, you probably hear that more times than you're like, how do we impact that? How do you change that? Because that's not just the school, that's more of a community. Energy, that how do we change that?
Well, and I think it's that, I think it's all part of that. We all play a role. And the fact that, you know, I may not be able to, you know, I may not be able to affect all of the sectors. You know, I may not be able to affect, you know, the restaurants in our community, or I may not be able to affect a certain sector in our community, but I can affect the parts that I can affect. I can affect the education system. I can affect schools. I can affect the outlook that staff, students, and parents have. And as you said, when you do the math, you know, we make up a third of our community, a quarter of our community. You know, pretty close to all of that. With people who are directly affected by what happens in the in the school system. And like I said, all those 10,000 parents work in our community. So if I create a culture within our school district that students are happy and parents are happy, and you know, we create these emotions that start in a positive way, that ripples out from there. And I think, and then from there, you know, people have to make that choice, but I think, you know, and what they're gonna do with that then. And, but I think that's part of leading by example. I do believe that we all have choices, and I can choose to...
We all have choices.
I can choose to be unhappy, or I can choose to be happy. Yeah. And if I choose to be happy, and you're choosing not to be happy, I can't make you do that. Yeah. But I also have a lot of experience that the more I choose to be happy around you, that eventually that rubs off on you at some point. You know, if you continue to choose to be unhappy, at some points, I'm going to rub off on you.
Or you'll move on.
Or you're going to move on. Yeah. Or
you would move on away from me. Like,
yeah, hey. That's exactly it. But I think that, you know, just that repeated, the more we all make that choice to understand that we all have that control over ourselves, and that we can control those, but we can impact those people around us. And that if I'm choosing to interact nicely with other people, it's probably going to rub off on some other people. And then that's going to keep rippling around our community.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, school's a major part of our community.
Yeah.
Have major impact in the community.
Yes.
Where can we improve in the design of our community? From your view as an educator...
I think the first thought that comes to my mind, and I want to just clarify, I really do believe the school district has a huge impact on our community. And I just wanted to quantify that a little bit in the fact that Humboldt Unified School District in Prescott Valley is the largest employer in Prescott Valley. Humboldt Unified School District is the second largest employer in the entire county. And so... When you take a look at the magnitude of the number of people that we employ, we're the second largest employer, the second largest impact as far as the employment goes in the entire county, and the first in Prescott Valley. There's an economic price tag to that too, on the fact that, you know, personnel-wise, you know, we probably have about a $30 million payroll. And since we're the largest employer in Prescott Valley, you know, our school district is responsible for $30 million coming into our community.
Yeah.
That's a huge chunk of money.
That is.
That has the potential to impact because our teachers then, our staff members, are using that $30 million to pay rent, to pay mortgages, to buy food, to go to grocery stores, to do all the things that is the economic engine of this community. And so I think I just wanted to lay that out, that I do believe that we have a we are a big driver in our community from an economic standpoint. But I think we're a big driver in just creating that culture. Going back to everything that I just said is, you know, between parents and staff and students and, you know, we're pushing 20,000 people in our community. We have the ability to drive some conversations, to drive emotions, to drive all of that. And I think one of those, so all of that to say too, you know, I think one of the ways that we can drive the community is not only, or contribute to the community is not only by our actions and what we contribute to our community, our individual and collective participation in you know, in what's happening with voting locally, with shopping locally, with engaging in activities. You know, the town has the all kinds of activities that are afforded. And so how are we contributing and engaging ourselves to be an active member of our community? I think that's part of it. And then, you know, one of the things that I really want to do is one of those transformations and rethinkings that I really want to do as a school district is school districts historically have functioned around the idea of, you know, so I have, we have 10 buildings in this community, 10 schools, and we have 10 buildings. And for the most part, we use those buildings and we use them till about 3 o'clock. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we shut them down and we walk away and they sit empty for a chunk of time. There's a lot of things that are going on in our community from that 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock time period that we have 10 buildings that for the most part, or the high school is a little different. The high school has a lot of, you know, sports and activities,
yeah.
But, you know, I love the idea of our schools being center points of our community, you know, because I know one of the things that we always talk about in different groups that I'm involved in is meeting space, activity space. You know, we want to get together and do yeah. things, but, you know, where can we get together that can hold 150 people, 200 people, 300 people?
Mm-hmm.
And again,
I think it's so important because then you're drawing the community into
yeah.
the schools from a different perspective, not
yes.
just education.
Yeah.
But then now I see value
yes.
in those 10 buildings, as you put it.
Yeah.
And so then I want to make sure those buildings are around.
Yes.
Right? Because I see value. We can have meetings in the evening. We can hold clubs there. We can do these different things that supports our community.
Yeah.
And then I'm more engaged with what you're doing, even though I might not have any kids in the school system today.
Correct.
They're all moved on, but I still am connected back to the school district and see the value in it.
Correct. You know, and one of those things that we're talking about when it comes to education and with our kids is that rethinking about learning and the fact that, you know, I don't have my phone with me, but the reality is our kids are learning in ways that we never learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we wanted to learn something, it was in, you know, from the library or...
Do the kids know the Dewey Decimal System? Today, I just have to ask that question. Do they still know it?
No.
Okay. They have a different way.
They have a different way. And it's called their phone. And it's called Google. You know, but our kids are learning, whether we like it or not, and some of it is good learning mm-hmm. that we appreciate, and mm-hmm. some of it is learning that we're going, why are you engaging that?
Yeah.
But it's the learning, but the point of that is that kids have access to learning in ways that we never did.
So many different forms and
absolutely,
context.
And in context, in places and times. You yeah. know, when I wanted to learn, I had to go to the public library or school, and those had open hours and closed
yeah.
hours. And we have kids who are learning at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And so, what are we doing as a school system to honor that learning?
Yeah.
And
how do you adapt to meet the needs of your customer?
Correct. Absolutely.
Right? Look at the kids as your customer.
Yes.
Which they are, and that
yes.
feeds through to their parents.
Yep.
Right? So it's those two, but
yep.
yeah, I'm naturally a late night person. I like to learn late at night. So how do you accommodate that?
Yep.
How does the school district do that?
Yeah, and so, you know, that's the work we're doing in the schools with our kids and our teachers. But going back to what we were talking about, the greater community, I also see that, you know, because I'm a night guy, you know, I much prefer to stay up late at night. And I think about some of the things, you know, how could our buildings be used? You know, and I drive by on a really nice day when the sun is shining, pickleball courts around this community are just full.
Yeah.
But what if I'm a guy who wants to play pickleball, you know, at 9 o'clock at night?
Mm-hmm.
And it's 30 degrees like it's been, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're not very useful. But again, I have 10 gyms that, could we do something
yeah.
to better meet the needs of our community and afford opportunities not only for our kids during the school day, but our greater community, you know, all the time?
Well, let me flip that thought. So that's how you're thinking about how your schools and your business can better impact the community.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see, or where do you see an opportunity for the community to help you?
I think
in this partnership,
sure,
because we're all in it to build a good life. We're
yep.
all in it to build a better community.
Yep.
So you just spent a few minutes sharing, here's what we want to do. Here's what I'm rethinking how our schools can connect to the community.
Correct.
You got to be sitting over there saying, boy, if I could just get this from the business community or just get this from this sector.
Yep. You know, and, you know, again, that there's no easy answers. There's not an easy button on any of that. But, you know, I think part of that answer is a philosophical thing on just, you know, the support of our schools, the mm-hmm. work that we do in our schools every day. You know, I think we do really important work. And I think part of the work that we're doing and part of what I'm about to say is the responsibility of the school district and us getting our messaging out and what is it that we're doing and why is mm-hmm. it that we're doing. But I think the other side of that is I think there's a community responsibility on better understanding what the what the school districts are trying to do. And that, you know, there's times where school district comes under some pretty intense pressure from people accusing us of not doing right by kids. And I would disagree with that all day long. Mm-hmm. I think we are doing right by kids, but I think that comes from a point of people not understanding. And I think there's, again, we take some ownership in that, but I think our community needs to take ownership that that's part of our community is taking the time to inform yourself mm-hmm. on what's going on in the community.
So would you say the community in some areas is just unengaged with the education system, and so therefore they don't fully understand what you're doing, and that leads to that lack of like you're doing wrong by the kids in the community?
I think it's a disengagement for whatever reason that disengagement.
So how do we engage, right? How do we keep people engaged? I would say when your kids are out of school.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? That's exactly. So my kids have all moved on. So now how do I stay engaged with the school system?
Yep. And how do you stay engaged? And part of that is, again, so what are we doing as a school district to make ourselves approachable, to make mm-hmm. ourselves have that value added?
Yeah.
You know, that's part of our role. But and so part of that is communicating with our community on why that's important, what we do have to offer, what value we do offer. If you don't have kids in the schools, why is it still important? And what value do we add to our community, even though you may not have kids? Maybe because, or you don't understand all of that. I think that goes into, you know, specifically some of the things, you know, one of the examples that I think about is we've, you know, funding in the state of Arizona is, you know, we're unfortunately, you know, when you compare Arizona across the United States, we fund education 49th, we're 49th out of 50. So, you know, we don't have a robust funding mechanism for mm-hmm. education in the state to begin with. And then when you get into this concept of bonds and overrides and these mm-hmm. special elections that that school districts, that's the only other way a school district can raise money. And, you know, historically, that's been part of the struggle of this community is supporting
a bond or an override.
A bond or an override. And again, part of that is our greater community understanding that, you know, if there's $1.35 a month added to your tax bill, why is that $1.35 important? You know, mm-hmm. what does it do not only for our students, but what does it do for you, even though you may not have any students in our district? Yeah.
Well, I know one of the things that we're asked always when a new business is coming to town, one of their first stops, there's the top two or three, but education is always there.
Yep.
Healthcare is another one, but they always want to know what kind of schools you have.
Yep.
And it's an uphill battle because we are ranked 49th as a state. So they got the headline.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then you got to say, and we have a really great school in Prescott Valley, a school system with great teachers and great kids. And but it's a conversation that has to occur.
Yes.
And so, but that's like number one for people moving here. And so how do we create that, connect that to the businesses so they see that value so that you can bridge this gap?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like you said, when you talk about a community, Prescott Valley, trying to attract businesses, because that's part of an economic, you know, engine in a community is, you know, one of the first questions that business owners look for is they know their employees that they're going to hire is going to want mm-hmm. that, but definitely families moving in. It's education is usually one of the top two questions. Yeah. What are your schools like?
Education, healthcare, and then what's rising to the top right now is affordability. Can my employees afford to live here?
Yep. And again, going back to earlier in our conversation, I think a fourth question that a lot of people are asking when they're looking at communities is quality of life.
Yep.
You know, all of that other stuff is important, but I want to live somewhere where I can do things, where I can engage with other people in meaningful ways. And that quality of life is so important, which then again goes back to that whole interconnectedness of everything. The quality of life is based on, you know, having good businesses that you can go to, having good activities, having good facilities, having good schools, all of that stuff.
That's the circle of life, right?
Yep.
This is just like the circle of a community. You can't have two of the three or two of the four. You got to have all four.
Yep.
If you're missing one,
yep.
it really starts to impact. And
it does.
And I think people sometimes they miss that. Like if we put all our energy in education and we let our healthcare slip, well, we're going to be in the same spot.
Yes.
Yep. People will be like, well, but I need good healthcare. I'm aging.
Yeah.
I'm at that age where I need that. Or, or what am I going to do when I'm not working? I spend this many hours not working.
Yep.
Am I going to enjoy my time here?
Yeah. And are there things to do that I can engage in a meaningful way? Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, that meaningful way too is, you know, the, you know, we talk a lot about that again in education and you know, you get your baby boomers and your Gen X and your millennials and all of that stuff. And it's an interesting conversation, but, you know, one of the things that we do know about the younger generation is, unlike our generation, where for the most part, the focus of our generation was you were committed to an employer and it was about doing the right thing and it was about making a living to raise your family. And, you know, it's those old, you know, little house on the prairie ideals that we've always lived. And the reality, and I don't think it's a bad thing, it's just the reality is the younger generation, the millennials, the Gen Zs, they don't think that way. Mm-mm. They're not about, I want to find an employer that I can commit the next 20 years of my life because that's the right thing to do. What drives our younger generation is meaningful engagement. Yes. They want to live in communities where they can engage in a meaningful way. They want to have a job that they can feel as though they're meaningful contributors to something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to go in and just grind 8 hours a day and walk away. Yep. They want purpose. And in that respect, my hat's off to them, because I think there's a lot of value in finding what your purpose is and then doing something that really drives that purpose. And I think our community needs to understand that. I think our education system needs to understand that, that's what our younger generation is looking for. Is so as we're designing and rethinking an education system, as we're designing and rethinking community, I think those are important parts to, for us to remember about if we want to attract and keep people here, what are we doing to meaningfully engage them on all levels?
And that goes back to choice, right? As as employers and as a community, we have a choice to either engage at that level. And we work on it in our company because we've been around a long time. We started with those old roots of people stay for a long time, right? And it's evolving. But it's, you have a choice when somebody leaves to say, well, just gave 5 years of our time to that employee to raise them and get them right where they're ready to go and then they leave. Or you have a choice to celebrate that.
Yes.
And say, apparently you've gotten all you can get from us.
Yeah.
And we got you, and now you're ready to launch to the next chapter of your life and go to the next spot and we can celebrate that.
Yep.
And I think if we could do a better job as a community of that, celebrating the change.
Yes.
Celebrating the transformation of people moving around, then it brings us, because it's a whole different mood.
Yes.
You're congratulating people. Congratulations.
Yes. Yep.
You're moving on. Like we have a tenant that has been leasing from us, great tenant, and they want to, now they're ready to buy a building. Or build a building and move on. And I'm like, congratulations.
Yeah,
that's
wow.
Great. That's part of this whole thing. We're all chasing living a good life, and that's part of their definition.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have to celebrate that. So you have to be there with them, cheer them along the way.
Yep.
And I think that changes the mood.
Yes.
And I think that's a big factor that I see in society today. You see it on the news at night. It's just, I don't even turn it on anymore. But you just see it all around you where they're just trying to create this bad, dark mood.
Yeah.
And like I heard it last night, I walked in and somebody was accusing somebody of being a victim. I'm just like, really? On the TV? And it's like, there's not a single victim up there. They're in a bad spot, but there's no victims.
Yeah.
But we go to that dark spot and rather than kind of look at the upside or how can we solve this? And it's not just the solution. It's how do we get to the solution?
Yep.
Like once we figure out what the solution is, I still have to figure out how to do it.
Yep. And one of the things that I, you know, again, going to that, it's about choosing your mindset because, you know, you can take any situation and you can choose to view it as a negative or you can choose to view it as a blessing. And And I think part of that is as we engage with people in our community, as I engage with teachers, as I engage with parents, you know, part of life also is understanding that things aren't going to be, you know, puppies and rainbows and happiness and flowers. You know, there's tension and there's challenges and there's misunderstandings that we have to get through. And I think part of that mindset going into any sort of challenging situation is choosing the mindset that I'm going to choose to assume positive intent. I'm going to choose that if I've got a misunderstanding with you or a conflict with you, I'm going to enter into this conversation assuming that you're doing things from a positive intent, that you're trying to do the best you can, and that I just don't understand where it is that you're coming from, as opposed to entering, you know, that darn Brad, I knew he was going to do this. And
but how are we raised? It, like, not by our parents or school, but just culturally, we're raised for the latter.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. You must be doing something to intentionally harm me.
Yes.
Yep. Where it could be the exact opposite.
Yep. And it's about flipping that narrative. It's about flipping that mindset. Yes. And that's the importance of building a community, is we have to understand and respect that we're all different and we all react differently to different situations.
And we're all just trying to do our best.
Yep. And we really are trying to do our best. I mean, I have met very few people in my life
that are not trying to do
who are best. Intentionally trying to do bad.
Yeah.
We're too busy with our own lives. Yeah. I've met very few people who have the time to sit there and sinistry plot. You know,
well, we've seen that on the TV, so we think it happens all the time,
right? That's exactly. It doesn't.
No. So we could sum up our hour here of the components that go into the design of a great community so we can all live a good life. Mindset.
Yep.
Changing the narrative.
Yep.
Moods.
Yep.
Positive moods.
Yeah.
And positive emotions.
Yep.
What did I miss?
I think all of that, and then I think the other thing that I would add is then using all of that to take action.
Take action.
To
don't
do something.
Be passive. Yes.
Don't be passive, because that's part of a vibrant community, is if no one's willing to do anything, then nothing's going to get done.
That's right.
But we need to have all of that stuff, and then we have to be willing to come together and engage in activities, or a superintendent has to be willing to open their buildings, or a business has to be open to and willing to, and the town has to be open and willing to, you know, whatever that is.
Well said.
We all need to then bring those mindsets and be willing to come to the table and say, and I'm a part of this, and I want to be an active participant in making this happen.
Great. Well said. Well, John, I want to thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Appreciate the time.
Want to thank you for joining us today on Living a Good Life. Hope you enjoyed this episode.